Just take a moment and let's just expand the universe a little bit, shall we?
You must unlearn what you have learned.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Caulfield Kenobi presents Legends Library.
There's always a bit of truth in legends.
Routine information is not repeat. Not simply shouted in the general direction of its intended recipient. Is that clear?
To defeat an enemy, you must learn.
Now here are your hosts, Luke Siders and Randy Theriault.
But enough of this. You've come a long way to challenge me. Make a worthy effort.
Hey everybody, I'm Randy.
And I'm Luke.
I'm Lisa.
And I'm Cole.
And you're listening to Legends Library. We're a podcast dedicated to the Legends line of Star Wars books. And we have already had a pre-conversation. I hope that we can keep it going. We're having fun already. I hope you can hear that. And I hope you'll continue to hear that. We are going to be talking about the book Revelation, Legacy of the Force, Revelation, written by Karen Travis, one of our favorite authors. And this is a very amazing, very incredible book. But before we do that, we're going to talk a little bit of news. And Lisa, will allow the ladies to go first.
The only one here.
The one. Well, I was including Luke. No, I'm just kidding, Luke. Just kidding. So we're going to let the lady go first. Let's talk about the EA game that was just canceled. That is, why can't Lucasfilm and video game companies get it together? There's a long line. For every success story, there's an equal and opposite, like, just train wreck.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
What have you heard?
Well, it's EA Vancouver that they decided to cancel the game that Visceral originally had canceled. They took over and then officially canceled it. There was a really good video, I don't know if you guys watched it, of Gary Whitta, who was just like face palming for like 2 minutes.
I tried to watch it and it wouldn't open, so I wonder if it's been adjusted.
Disney shut it down.
Yeah. Can't have that negative publicity.
No sir. So do any of you know what any information of what this, like, where
it was just at? Called Star Wars.
Well, I know the Visceral game was supposed to be, what was it? You're almost like rebel. There was like smugglers that you could control as part of your team, but EA felt it was too narrow and they wanted it to be more like wide open type game. So they changed, I believe, the main writer. Because I think the first writer was a person that did a lot of the
Uncharted.
Yes, Uncharted games. Okay. So they went a new path and then they canceled again. But I mean, we could have a whole hour long podcast of me ranting about EA and video games and Star Wars, because Battlefront 2, not impressed at all. Even the first one, I think the 2005 video game is better than the last two they've crapped out. So I don't know. I won't keep going because don't want to get fired up before this good book. But I mean, the Star Wars Old Republic game. I'm like, why don't you just make a new one? I don't know. Knights of Old Republic are some of the greatest games I ever played, and they had some good books. Just make a third one. I don't know what you guys are waiting for.
Yeah. I think the Old Republic thing is it's got so many subplots.
I would buy it instantly.
Like, yeah, that's true. But it would bring confusion because there are so many subplots and stuff. And it's kind of like functioning inside of like an old Legends timeline, and so to bring
probably
it in,
part of it,
you know.
Yeah,
so
well, I mean, they were going to bring Revan into Clone Wars, so it's not too feasible that they wouldn't do a canon Knights of Old Republic.
Well, yeah, Revan still is like one
you
of
could
our
just name it that books. Make it your own new canon 1,000 years before, like a little before Bane, and then just all you had to do is name it that and people would buy it. Because people have been waiting over, you know, since what? I think it was like 2006 when the second one came out.
Remember Republic Commando? That was awesome.
Yes, it was.
It was like a Halo wannabe.
Yeah. Didn't it come out before Halo? Or I'm just wishing. No, no.
We're getting off topic, boys.
Sorry, my bad.
That's Kieran Travis related.
Yes, Kieran Travis related.
Yeah,
that's
see?
That's true. Look at that.
Nice. Yeah. Full circle. Yeah,
it's like, you're like whatever, 7 degrees of separation from Kieran Travis. So we have no idea.
That's all our goals.
That's it. We have no idea beyond what we just shared. We don't have any inside information. We're not that special, but it just sucks that another game got canceled.
It just feels like, you know, they have something for the fans and then they're like, oh wait, we took it back.
Yeah. I'm like, well, what books are going to be related to it? Cause that's what I'm really into. Like, the Battlefront 2 book, Inferno Squad was really cool and all that kind of stuff. So I was looking forward to the new material, the new literature that might surround anything new, but okay. So Cole, man, you are mm-hmm. in love with Resistance. Tell us about your love for Resistance. Please defend it. I really want to like it. I'm trying. I can't get through it.
I just think it's pretty good, and the trailer for the second half of the first season looks really interesting. I mean, it looks like, I don't know if y'all have seen it, the trailer.
Yes.
Did y'all watch it? Yeah, it looks like it's going to intersect with The Force Awakens, so it means we're probably going to be getting into post-Last Jedi territory in, like, season two.
Yeah.
Just because of how close all that is.
Yeah, the main character, he's from Hosnian Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Which we see blow up later on.
So it's got to be getting into some darker territory there.
And the Hux speech is mm-hmm. in it. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And like, oh, because I mean, it wasn't really placed. I mean, only 3 episodes in. That's me. I'm like speaking as if I have like I'm an aficionado.
Three episodes?
I can't get through it. I'm trying, guys.
And I tried just watching it.
I
mean, you don't have to do anything. You just have to sit there, you know?
I know. Gosh, I don't, like, I love everything. And I feel bad because I know that they're, like, here, I, like, Dave and Aaron, guys, you're laying it down. I love your episodes. I love your show, guys. I know you're hearing this and you're like, Randy's a jerk. He doesn't even watch the show we do our podcast on. I love you guys. Guys, I love you guys. You guys got to know that. But this is the first thing I haven't been able to like get behind. And I feel bad. Like, cause I'm, you know, Luke.
I don't think you should feel bad.
I do. Cause I want to give it, like, I recognize it's not for my age. And I should be able to rise above that and say, it's not for my age. It's for like, you know, for younger kids and still watch it and stay, you know, connected with it and be, you know, just be responsible as a podcaster who runs a Star Wars podcast. And, you know, I'm really struggling. I haven't given up though. That's the difference. I'm not like, we're, you know, I just don't give up. I'm not like you, Luke. Sorry, like, I'm bad, but I'm not as bad as Luke.
That's the difference.
So, man, anything else going on in your Star Wars fandom before we move into our book review? Luke?
I mean, this book review is all I really want to talk about, to be honest. I mean, okay. I feel like I've been waiting 2 months because I read this book before we did the last book. So
right on. Okay, how about like, you,
come
Lisa?
On, guys, come on.
Yeah, fine, go ahead.
I even went through it twice because I was like, well, you know, I got to refresh. And
okay, all right. Well,
it's a great book.
Okay, right on. Well, I guess with that being said, we're going to go ahead and head over to our book review.
All right, so here we are. Legacy of the Force Revelation. Been waiting years to talk about this book, I feel like. This is written by Kieran Travis. For those of you that are Republic Commando fans, I personally feel like this is... Oh, I don't know the word for it. Maybe you guys know. What is the word? Like an encore. Like an encore performance to me.
Yeah.
Because I know this is like her last book.
That is an encore.
Shush. All right, redo the cold open. No.
It's a swan song. Let's call it.
Yeah, there you go. Swan song. That's good. Because
is that elegant enough for you, Lisa?
That's okay? Beautiful.
We talked about it before with her other books. I feel like we're, at least me personally, I'm getting some closure. but I also feel like I'm experiencing her writing again, which I, you don't realize how much you enjoy it until you go back to it. Just her character development. And I mean, she can write four chapters in a row about people sitting around a Mandalorian table, and it's exciting to me. So, you know, that's something special. But this book, we start off, we kind of already talked about the beginning last month, in the end of the episode, where Jaina is basically talking about what Jason has become, and how she needs to basically be trained by Boba Fett to neutralize Jason. Something that Jason doesn't have training in. So she wants the upper hand on him. So that's kind of like our prologue to the book. But our first main section that we're going to talk about here is the story that surrounds Ben Skywalker and basically his investigation of Mara Jade's death, which shows so much maturity through this whole story arc. And is one of, I'm not even going to say it's one of my favorites, because each story arc was my favorite. So we get that out of the way now. But basically, he is determined to prove that Jason killed his mom on Cavan. And he knows that he has to do this the right way, like a detective, like Lon Shivu taught him. So I'm going to tee it up there, and we can start getting into this, because there's a lot of cool scenes in here. Now I'm just ready to go. Who wants to start talking about it?
Let's go with Cole first. We went with Cole or with Lisa first a couple times. Let's go ahead and Cole, what are your thoughts on the Ben Skywalker plot thread?
It's really good seeing him just like mature this much. Like, he's grown up so much in this over the course of the series. I mean, and he's still only like, how old is he in this point? Like
14, bro.
14, 15, something like that. He's young.
He was 13 in the beginning of Legacy of the Force.
Yeah, it started to cut a year and a bit.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, there are so many.
No, there's, I mean,
players and
it's so cool how he goes to him and Shivi together is just so much fun. And when they go back to Cavan, I mean.
I love that how they got like super nerdy. It was just like, let's be technical and confuse them with information.
They're talking about the rocks and stuff.
To look at rocks.
We don't need diamonds. We're more interested in this.
They're looking at Ignatius rocks. So, you know, that is interesting.
He wrote that.
Lon Shivu is one of my favorite characters. I think he's a really cool. That juxtaposition of like seasoned war veteran, like, you know, a slash like tender mentor to Ben.
He's honorable.
Yeah, really cool.
What's interesting about the story is really that no one at this point has yet believed the fact that Ben knew that Jason had killed his mother. Like, everyone was so convinced that, yeah, it was not Jason, that it was
Alima.
Alima Rar, because it was like a case of somebody using poisons. And no, like, when he had that interaction with like Jaina and his aunt Leia, and just explaining that, you know, like, no, these are my beliefs, but they're like, you kind of need to give us concrete evidence. And yet in other parts of the stories, everyone was so quick to believe the fact that there was no evidence, but circumstantial evidence. And it shows a lot of faith that they still have, that they could possibly bring Jason back instead of being Darth Cadus.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
go ahead, Luke.
Oh, I was just going to talk about the Cavan scene, like the Force Ghost scene, or some of the coolest parts of this whole book. Like her just, you know, pulling the hair, you know, dropping her hair in front of her to kind of hint, you know, to Ben how to catch him. I mean, that was just, the scene gives me goosebumps every time I'd listen to it.
With this thread, there are so many goosebump scenes.
You're right.
Would you all agree? I mean, but would you all agree? The question is, would you all agree? Is the question that I could see visually the Karen Travis writing that particular scene. I could see in my head so vividly that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know if it's because we've seen a Force ghost before, you know, in the films, but it was so vivid in my imagination.
Well, it helps that we witnessed like the actual murder itself too.
So true. Right. Right. Gosh. His initial presentation to Leia and Jaina, where he's like, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to disappear for a while. In that he kind of laid out his preconceived kind of investigation, saying, I'm going to prove, and kind of laid it out there and said, I'm going to prove that Jason killed Mom.
Exactly.
But I'm going to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. And so.
And he was like, and if the evidence says he didn't, then he didn't.
Yeah.
Like, but they're very clear on that. It's like, you know, you can't let your feelings guide you in this entirely.
Right. That we've got to have more thoughts. I mean, I think.
No, I do. I'm waiting to hear.
Yeah. So guys, don't be afraid. This is the time we're going to be talking about that thread line. So we're not saving it for later. So let's go ahead and dig into
the even stealth the X scene was, yeah. I mean, I know not a lot happened, but man, I was on the edge of my seat. Like, oh man, we gotta get it. We gotta get Jason. You know, we gotta get Mara's hair out of that cockpit. You know, I was just waiting for something to happen. Like Jason walk in. I want to see my stealth X, or you know what I mean. That's just the way this series has been going. I feel like, you know, just we're about to take Jason down. Oh no, he gets away. Yeah.
Well, then, they wanted to make sure that it wouldn't be obvious that they had been the ones investigating the stealth axes, and Nyathol had been speaking with Luke, who then kind of gave clearance to Shivu to, you know, let's check out all the stealth axes as an excuse that they were going to investigate that one.
Fleet-wide maintenance or whatever.
Exactly. Which is,
the tension of actually finding that hair with the tab on the end that had been ripped out of the tension
with
of
blood
of
on
that,
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With that hair deep in the cracks of the inside. That was really cool. How about the situation where at the very end of the thread where he lays out all of his,
oh man,
he's got Jaina's brush there. He's got
Mara's brush.
I'm sorry, Mara's brush, right? You're right. He's got obviously the investigation little droid that he's carried along with him that was still sealed and still had integrity and he hadn't opened it up yet. And then Jaina from, you know, from Mandalore or whatever, she's still with Fett. And am I correct in remembering that?
Like, yeah, she called in.
Yeah.
Hologram. Yes, in.
Yeah, he right. got Jag to find her.
Am I correct also in saying, in remembering that it was, she was all about, we're going to capture Jason. It was after that conversation that it was like, oh, we're going to take him out.
It was a conversation she has with Murta as well.
Yeah.
That really kind of like reinforced that, like, are you sure this is what you should do? Like, but can you kill your family?
It was just another piece towards, you know, hanging out with the Mandalorians and kind of changing her thoughts to no capture, kill. And then that was just another piece of the puzzle of, okay, this has to happen. Especially because, you know, Jason trusts Shivu so much. You know, he gave him that leave in the middle of the book, and then he brought him in and confessed to him that he killed Mara on video camera.
It was definitely a lot of pride in that situation when he's just like, no, like, he was like, I don't want to be seen as like some gangster. I want them to know that it was self-defense.
He was also, he almost seemed proud of it though, at least in the audiobook, the way Mark Thompson said it, and I don't know how it was portrayed in the book. But, you know, my wife watches a lot of Dateline. And it seems like it's one of those things, though, like that killers do. You know, after time, everybody, no matter what you do, you always feel the need to tell somebody something. And I think that was just his instance of, I feel like telling somebody.
That's
it. Just so happened that, you know, Shivu has wired and
exactly.
You're saying, Lisa?
Well, it's just, you know, a lot of murderers, when they defend themselves, they will admit to a point, but there's always going to be some little bit to the truth that is not accurate. Like when he's talking to Shivu about, yes, he killed Mara, and he says she followed me into the, like, the tunnels, whereas she was the one who was like, come find me, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she said
that was
up.
The detail that he was like, oh, okay, I guess it's kind of justified. And, like, you know, he changed it in his mind, but no, he was the one followed her into the mines.
Yeah.
How about Leia going up and hugging Ben after he had presented all of his facts?
And she was crying. Oh, yeah. That teared me up.
Sad. It's her son, but she, yeah. There's no way not to respect Ben for the way he did that. Yeah, you know,
it's like Leia in The Last Jedi. It's like, never, Luke says he can't save him.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like Ben and Jag throughout this whole series have been like the points of like solid information that everyone should be listening to and like have their heads on their shoulders, basically. Whereas like everyone else is like, no, we're gonna go believe that story instead.
Ben does now. First few books, he was kind of.
Well, Jason's he was like best. 13.
Yeah, he was 13.
He's so cool.
But was that your Ben impersonation?
Yeah.
Jason's the best.
I love that Luke had the locket with Mara's note, and then Ben was able to read that note.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, don't be mad at me, farm boy.
Every time I hear farm boy, I like, that just kills me.
Yeah. All
right. So not to jump ahead to the end of the book, but the end of this arc we know is like the last scene of the book.
Was wonderful.
Man, I'll tell you this. Like, I never, ever like tear up, cry or anything. But I've listened to that scene twice and I tear up every single time because it's so awesome.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's happening, even though they don't explicitly state it.
It's so cool. Like the music that they have in the audiobook and everything too. It's just, it's so cool.
The scene that we're talking about, for those of you that haven't read the book or don't remember or whatever, but Luke has the wherewithal, or I'm sorry, Ben has the wherewithal at the very end. Ben has already seen his mom and earlier on in the investigation back at Cavan at the murder scene. Mara Jade reveals herself to Luke, and Ben can hear this conversation happening in the other room or off in the distance, and he has the wherewithal to kind of give Dad or give Luke his moment with Mara. And you know, he's already had this intense conversation with Luke. Ben's already had this intense conversation with Luke. You want to die. You want to go. You don't care anymore. You want to go where Mom is. And that kind of, like, you know, call to the carpet, like, no, you have much to live for here. Mom wouldn't want you to quit and to give up. So you need to, you know, Ben, the son, the 14-year-old says, you need to cowboy up, right, Cole? Right, Texas? Cowboy up.
Yeehaw.
You need to cowboy up, and there's work here to do. The force isn't done with you here. So, you know, you're all in. You might as well own it now. And so it was a very emotional scene, and it was capped by Ben making that decision to allow Luke the moment that he so needed,
and so that she could stay a while.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so wonderful. I this is why we all adore Karen Travis. Like, she thinks of these kind of things that we just need feel good about ourselves.
Right. I mean, and you could have, like, or you could have stopped right there. The things that we just need.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, why is it that, why is it? I mean, I guess we can't, this brings up like a thing. There are things that fans really look for. And I know if we get our way all the time, that's kind of like, it's not fun because we're not surprised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why is it that it doesn't happen more often? We're like, you know, we just the fans get what they actually are looking for. And Karen Travis gets that. Obviously, you know, Lucasfilm and Disney didn't get it because they canceled the stuff that she was writing, right? Or they canceled her progress or canceled the, you know, canceled the Republic Commando. Like,
was this her last book?
Maybe. You know, I don't know the production, the production date on the Imperial Commando.
Yeah, it had to be this or Imperial Commando.
Probably around the same time.
It was definitely, It this one almost feels like it is the last because it doesn't conclude her stories in the sense that, like, she would have known.
Like, she expected to be able to
like, she would have been, like, fixing all the kind of, like, loose ends. And here it's like, oh, what happened to, you know, so it's like, Jang Skirata. We don't get any more of him in the
Venku,
story.
What happened to, you know?
Exactly.
I should maybe correct my opinion. I mean, the idea of bringing, sorry, Cole, I'm bringing it up, but the idea of bringing the Clone Wars back was like, finally, somebody somewhere gets it. Like somebody made a corporate decision and could care less about the fans and what they wanted. And like, oh, yeah, we're going to start Rebels now, you know, and it's like, well, but we were completely immersed and invested in that storyline. Yep, but we're doing something different now.
Exactly.
Like, there wasn't any consideration at all. Like, for like, I mean, I'm sure there was somebody in the room saying, hey guys, we can't do that to the fans. But it was it wasn't heard, obviously, because somebody said, yep, but we don't care. We're going to shut it down. Yeah, but it's not finished. What about Ahsoka? What about Rex? Well, the dollars and the money and the this and the that and the budget and the this.
Yeah,
you know,
so tell that to the fans of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Ironically, the Clone Wars is what killed Karen Travis's career in Star Wars.
I know.
Jeez, that's true. You're right. I'll give you that.
I personally think what her strength is, just to talk about her, it's more the character development. She spends so much time on characters to make it like. They feel so real, and she really gives you an insight of what they're thinking, what they see. I mean, there's a bunch of parts in this book, even just the audiobook, where there's details. Like I noticed that, you know, she's explaining a scene and what we should be seeing and what we should be feeling that some authors just, they don't do as much. I mean, we got more, we're going to jump into the Jaina portion here next, but by the end of this book, I mean, I feel like I've gotten more Jaina than I have through the entire New Jedi Order series.
I completely agree. I really like Jaina in this story.
And it just builds her up even more.
She was less immature in this series, which is nice. Like, she actually learned something. Whereas, like, I feel that, like, other writers, they just didn't kind of give her, I guess, justice in that sense. And, like, whereas Karen Travis, it really kind of gets into her character and...
Christy Golden was poised for a Sword of the Jedi three-part, or, you know, storyline that she was gonna, she would
really
not, yeah, she would have killed this, you guys. She would have killed it. It was going to be called Sword of the Jedi, and it was going to be amazing, and Christy Golden was going to write it, and she writes say she's the same, she's not this, she's different than Karen Travis.
But she's quality, though.
She is legit, especially character development. You know, I feel like Karen Travis is in the world development kind of strength, you know, and, you know, the fact that she owns Mandalorian culture. And when she talks about Fett, exactly. It's like, oh, yeah, she gets it, you know, where Christy Golden, I would have loved to see what she would have done with Jaina as the Sword of the Jedi. Do you have an idea of where that was going to go? But anyway, that's a different episode.
Another thing with this series, I really feel that it almost sets Ben up as being a future Grandmaster.
Tell me
the whole time I was I could see him taking over for Luke, like, even at a younger age. It's just, he's so much more dependable than other Jedi and has like a head on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say he would have been better. You know, I do. because there he's balanced. He's got this intellect and this like
Luke gets annoying sometimes.
Yes.
He does.
Luke's always been a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
Yep. I think Ben Skywalker would have been a super awesome awesome grandmaster.
So who'd like to take off the Mandalore story arc?
Well, I don't mind.
I figured I was gonna ask you. I figured I'd give you the choice.
Mando Rey over there.
It's not like I don't adore Mando culture at all. but you can go ahead, Cole.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sure you have more notes than I do.
Well, I wrote less notes this time than I do other times. So, like, when the last time recorded, Randy did that really lovely, the epilogue about Jaina knowing what her brother has become and how he's this, like, empty shell. And then her realizing she needs to go to Mandalore and be trained by Boba Fett. And, like, it was such a great twist to the story. Like, I honestly, in the last book, I wouldn't have seen her quite going there. And then, like, her just walking in to like the Tapcalf bar with no lightsaber, and then everyone's just like totally okay with her. She's just some, you know, GAG agent, whatever. And then of course we get Karen Travis characters who come in and recognize that she's a Jedi, that instantly all the Mandalorian guns are just like pointed at her. That was such a great scene.
Oh yeah.
And just like, yeah, like she's determined that she wants to be trained by Boba Fett because he's known as a Jedi killer and hunter. And like, who else could she learn from than stopping her brother? Than the best. Yeah. And like the Boba Fett arc, which is so amazing. So you get like Jaina and like her training with Boba and like other Mandalorians. And then also you have Boba's arc of how he found his wife or ex-wife and how she'd been in carbonite for what, 40 years?
Yeah, 30 or 40 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, how like, he struggles that, to be a family man.
That was such an intense scene, like, you know, getting her body out of the carbonite and, you know, like the pain she's going through, like how she's blind and Jaina is trying to help. And then like her friendship that she starts developing with Murta Geb, which is, I think, a really nice part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And it continues. It gets more intense and awesome. And when we're done next month with the book, I'm going to recommend there's actually a YouTube fan film based on that, the last scene of the last book that you guys.
Yeah, really, I've seen that.
Yeah,
I haven't watched it yet.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Don't watch it yet. But it's
I don't
cool.
jump ahead, guys.
I don't jump ahead, guys. What do you guys? I'll throw this out when. And you guys are gonna have to jog my memory here. So when Jane is like, there's a force sensitive Mandalorian here.
Mm-hmm. Go tab. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, where is he a remnant of the? I've forgotten. So
it's Barden Juice. It's Barden Jussic. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Bardika.
Yeah.
Bardika. Yeah. Oh, I love the Mandalorian language she's created. It's so interesting.
Did anybody else feel like when she went back there and they're watching the bullet ball tournament? And, you know, Bevine is there talking to her at the table, and then Boba Fett walks in. I really felt like I was back on Mandalore in like the Imperial Commando book, and you know, it felt the same, like
exactly
the Mando Motors, you know, building, and you're in this tap calf there, and the way they describe the homesteads, and you felt like you're at the Skirata house again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, they're talking about eating around the dinner table, and Myrta and Jaina are becoming friends, and oh man, that was so much fun. You know, and then their little duel in the garage, like in some garage, you know, and Boba Fett gets a jump on her, and the guy's like 70, and he just...
It's amazing.
Yeah. That was so cool. And I love those scenes because they specifically, like, were teaching her lessons, and the book went into detail about it. It wasn't like, oh, they trained with her for 2 weeks and taught her these skills. No, it was Boba, you know, he's teaching her these skills of distraction and, you know, body language. And then Gore and Bavine teaching her with the sticks, you know, and how to fight with just that raw rage. Yeah. Let yourself go.
Go crazy.
Go crazy.
Yeah, deciding to use the word end. And that's how he fights. Yeah. Oh, those are such great scenes. I loved with the Tapcalf how there was a sign that said no strills. Because it's like, was that Lord Myrdalan who did something horrible in there?
Probably. It was Waylon Vow and his Strill, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, now Jang Skrata has Lord Myrdalan.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
I love that scene where they're training Jaina up near Friend Shice's memorial. And he picks up a skull, and it's a Yuuzhan Vong skull. Ugh. And in the book, he's just like, "Oh, we've met before," because he fits his best cat right into the skull.
Oh my.
And he's like, "Hope you've been rotting."
That wasn't in the audiobook.
No.
Yeah, he just sets his Beskar blade in this. Oh yeah, that fits perfectly. That's one I got.
How about the conversation between Jaina and Fett where at the end of Jaina's training, where Jaina makes sort of hints to a false assumption. Yeah, Fett showed me everything. And it's kind of, did you show me everything? And Fett's he's just kind of silent or whatever, that kind of feeling no, he's smart. He held something back. So, you know, and same thing with, he led Mandalore that way too. We have this tech now, or this ordnance, the ship, or the basilisk, or whatever, and
the Trakkad.
Yeah, and they're a little bit slower. Like their version is faster, has more armor.
Domestic spec versus the export spec.
Right. Yeah. So he always holds a little bit back. He's always got that
de-enriched. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
He survived being in his 70s living alone as a bounty hunter, though.
Right.
There's no other way he could have done that.
But it was a stark for Jaina. It was she's been experiencing Mandalore family and Fett and his family and friends and all that kind of stuff. And she's like, you can kind of hear her in the dialogue going, ha ha ha, yeah, yeah. And she kind of has this feeling like she's been accepted as family now, right? And she's like, yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah.
And you show, and kind of, and then kind of makes that assumption, like, yeah, and we're gonna do this, and yeah, you showed me everything now, and that's all of it, you know.
So, they still have something up their best cad,
right?
Yeah, it's kind of like in, was it the first Darth Bane book? Whenever Bane has to go off against the Swordmaster guy.
Yeah, it's the first one.
Yeah, and the guy's thought he taught him everything, but he's like, no, yeah. I didn't tell you everything.
Awesome.
So should we save the ending of this arc until we talk about the Battle of Fondor?
Yeah, we need to talk about Pelion coming back in a little bit more.
All right, let's start on that arc then.
Okay.
There's a whole mess of this, so.
Okay. Oh, Pelion.
Please don't pick me.
All right, Cole, you're up.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to just start at the end?
A bad connection.
Man, it's so great having him back, though. Regardless of how it
was nice.
Winds up.
Oh.
Wow.
He's such a decent character, you know, just a good person.
I was able to, I joined Andy and Dennis Keithley on a couple nights ago, and we talked about on Coffee with Kenobi, and we talked about our top five Star or Legends books. And one of the cool things that we got to talk about was Pelion and how much of a character he became by the end of the Legends storyline, and how admirable and what a man of character he became, and kind of, you know, from his beginning stages of just kind of being like the Watson to the Thrawn As Holmes. Holmes. Yes.
And then, growing into something so much more than that as the years go on.
Yeah, he watched and he truly learned.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Well, I'll take it, Cole. You want to dig into it a little bit?
Well, I just love that. Like, we meet him and he's just like, is he like playing like croquet or something like that?
Yeah.
And he's like watching his own like funeral. Like preparations. Like, it's got to be
honey tea.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Well, Jason sends his messenger.
Jason brings in.
There's a little detail there that I missed, and you guys read the book, so, and I read the beginning of the book, but a detail that I missed about Pelion's like son and that his personal assistant or whatever, I don't know what his
Vitor
Vitor Rage or something.
Yeah, that he kind of, he's like, I see a lot, like he kind of treated his assistant like a son, who was a highly ranked official.
Comes back though later, and doesn't he try to rule the empire? I think he goes up against Dala and Jeg.
Spoiler alert!
Sorry.
No, you're good. I don't remember that, so I'm just. I haven't gone through the Fate of the Jedi. I started, but I haven't gone through it in a while. So,
hey, I could be completely wrong. I'm just remembering something off the top of my head. So,
I don't have it. But the idea that Pelion kind of remembered his son, and that was something that I had missed, and I didn't really remember. So, not only is Pelion the Grand Admiral that we see and the character, but he's experienced this like personal loss. And so
there's a couple things I found funny about the Imperial Remnant portion. One is, it's funny how the Moff's culture apparently is the exact same. These guys are just power hungry British dudes. It sounds like it's like the same accent every time, but they're like the same thing. Like, like,
you know, you guys make the British seem bad, like, by doing
this. Well, no, I don't do it, but like in the Star Wars Old Republic games, all the Empire guys are like British accent, and like all the movies, you know, it's like, the heck.
It's supposed to show education, that's why.
Formality.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just an American thing, you know, the British were the bad guys in the revolution. I think it's really what it comes down to.
Boy.
But these guys are just like salivating at Vilbringi and Borleas, and then they're like, oh, well, we can just take over Fondor
territory.
You know? Yeah. They're like instantly just clapping, it. Like, you did a good deal. Like,
and then, like, you guys have been out of the loop for so long. Like, that culture has somehow stayed. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. And then I just loved how Pelion, you know, just kind of crumbled up Jason's letter and just kind of like blew him off a few times, but then, all right, we'll hear him out, you know.
And then
he doesn't trust him, which is why he rap, you know. Like, I mean, he's a smart guy and he knows Jason, you can't trust that guy at all.
Oh yeah, he sees right through it. Like, oh no, no,
I gotta have an ace up my sleeve.
Well, yeah,
and then Dala, like, has an ace up her sleeve. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, him having Dala at the expense of the Empire, where no one else knew that she was going to show up eventually at the Second Battle of Fondor. But yeah, like how Jason sends Tahiri to go and like discuss like the terms, and then the Moffs are so thrilled with that. And I love the fact in this story that the term Villip pops up again. And they're like, you're like, how it's like kind insult. Of a common insult now.
Yeah.
It's like how villain. Yeah, like you see cultures come into, you know, like different cultures, and then swear words get kind of incorporated and terms get incorporated, and like, and Villip was definitely one of those things, and she was completely a Villip in that situation,
just acting as Jason's
so
stooge
in universe jokes, ha ha, in universe. Ha ha ha.
So I think the big portion that we're all going to be getting to, I don't know if there's anything else you guys want to talk about, but it's definitely the second battle of Fondor, which is basically Jason wanting to, they want the shipyards of Fondor. Exactly. And at this point, Nyathol does not trust Jason at all. And she's already kind of been working with Luke to sabotage Jason, which the Jedi do when they knock out all the mind layers.
I really disliked Nyathol in this story because, like, she was very okay with betraying Jason because he's much more powerful than her. But at the same time, she did it at the risk of her own fleet. And then she regrets it. So she's like, I got to come to your aid and, like, smooth the situation out. But it's like, no, you were the leak. You caused
this. She was playing a role too, though.
Yeah, but it could have been, the surrender could have been different. Yeah. You know, they could have been a lot less lives if they just actually attacked the shipyards instead.
I actually didn't mind her that much, just because at this point, everybody's got to be getting desperate to take Jason out, because he is just...
Of course.
I mean, he could walk into her office and kill her, and then that's over. So I don't know if it's a way to figure out, I don't know, to take him down that distance. I don't know.
That was one neat thing with, like, the Jaina arc, when she's kind of unveiling all the traits that, like, Jason has, how he can, like, force walk, like, through time and... you know, like, he can, like, stop, you know, create shields, and then everyone's just like, well, if he's so powerful, why can't he just rule the galaxy at this point?
Yeah, that was
That was Boba doing it. If he can do this, why can't he do this? If he can do that.
Yeah, he's a regular jack of all trades. Yeah. Why?
He has limits still.
Right. The limit was his ability to gain a following. What did...
Well, no. I mean, Nyathol even said that he's very charismatic.
Okay, so Fett said all that stuff. He's like, wow, he walks through walls. He can affect events in the future. Like, what is his limit? And I've forgotten kind of what.
He still needs people to do stuff.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Yeah, he still needed. I guess that's what I meant by, you know, he can't do everything. He needs people to serve him
Exactly. When they realize, like, kind of the deception that Nyathol eventually has, and to hear he brings up that point of, like, well, you can't go up against her because you can't rule the fleet and be the Sith Lord. And then Jason's or Darth Cadus is like, yeah, you know, you make really good points about this kind of situation.
He still tries to do it, and I think that's his downfall, is he tries to do it all. He didn't see Emperor Palpatine running fleets and stuff.
No, of course.
He gets the right people to do it, you know?
And that goes back to the whole Imperial thing. Like, you guys have been here before. You've had a Sith Lord, and you've been the puppet master, or I shouldn't say puppet master. You have been the strong arm or the enforcer of a Sith Lord before, and how did it work out for you? So in Sidious and the Empire and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and now Darth Cadus comes along and he's like, I'll give you this.
The moths are chopping at the bit. And Palin's like, no.
I love how Palin insulted him about it, though.
Yeah, Palin's.
I've seen this before and it doesn't work out.
Right.
I've been around a long time, son.
He's like 94. So Tahiri Vela, in my conversations with Jay Krebs, she does a Starship Sabers and Scoundrels podcast, or one of the hosts there. She really has a soft spot in her heart for Tahiri Vela. I'm like, because she wanted it. She's like, hey, if you ever talk about Tahiri Vela, which Jay, if you're listening right now, I want to have that conversation someday, and I hope to have that conversation with you, because I got the impression that was somebody that, like, she could really sympathize in the right
way. Maybe in the New Jedi Order.
Well, she has a good arc in the New Jedi Order, and then she has an interesting arc in Fate of the Jedi, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. But right here. In this moment, right now, with no future, I don't like her at all. How can you like her? You're not supposed to. I know that, but like
she's weak.
Well, remember, like in the past, like he was tempting her with like watching her interactions with Anakin once again, and how much she actually loved him. Mm-hmm. So like he was grooming her for this kind of this attitude and this mentality. And then when like she was able to prove herself, should I just say it now?
Yep.
Yeah.
When she kills Pelion.
When she shoots him,
that's when Jason Darth Cadus is like, oh, by the way, you may call me Darth Cadus from now on. You're now my apprentice.
And she even has a line about like, we shouldn't dwell on the past. And he's like, oh, maybe she's learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, she's going to be after my job, because that as a Sith Lord is what you want as an apprentice, someone who's going to eventually try to take over.
Keeping I hated that terms. Scene. I knew when she like showed up at the door, I was like, oh, here we go.
How did she get the passcode?
Well,
she's used the Force.
It doesn't, but the line of all lines, my death is a foregone conclusion. It's how I die that is up to me now. Like that, or what? Can you guys
I don't remember the exact line.
It's not.
She's like, you're gonna die. And he's like, I know I'm gonna die. I'm 94 years old. It's how I die that matters to me.
Exactly. She's like, put your power, like, put all your like determination and power and your fleet behind Jason. And like, I think we need to explain the battle a little bit more. What's going on in the situation at this point?
You guys, I want to find that because I want to read it. But keep.
Yeah. So basically, at this point, when Jason decided to attack Fondor finally for the second time, even though he had tested Tahiri previously by having her shoot some pilots down. His plan was to have like mines around Fondor, which then Nyathol and Luke betrayed him. Nyathol comes to Jason's aid, bringing ships, and then the Imperials are there as well.
He's freaking out.
When it happens, the most important part of the Battle of Fondor is the fact that like Jason actually is able to go in and disable shields down in the capital. Like the whole time he's like, no, I got this plan. And like all his officers, like Nyathol, were just like, we don't have faith in you in this situation. He's like, I have battle milled powers. Don't worry. I've got this. Huh. Is able to turn like to eliminate the shield and then bombards the city, which then, has everyone react being like, who supports who? Fondor is then surrendering. And then Jason refuses to acknowledge this surrender.
Yeah,
which then results in Nyathol saying, I'm sorry, we're going to go against Jason now. So the fleet is split.
And Pelion is on her side.
Exactly.
Which is why Tahiri kills him. Before we move on, I just thought it was cool to mention when Nyathol shows up, when Jason's flying around in his ship and he's like freaking out because the Jedi are tricking him. There's ships all around me. They're coming in everywhere. There's, he's like yelling at all these ships and stuff. But they're actually tricking him. That was a cool scene.
It was a great scene. And
because
it
rattled him. Because then when, we had the scene where, Pelion, what Lisa just talked about, Pelion dies. And then the Moffs, help Jason out in this battle. So it's Jason, the Imperial Remnant, all versus Nyathol and her portion of the fleet. But then Dala shows up. And for a second, Jason's like, oh, it's just another Force illusion. And then one of their ships blows up and one of his guys is like, oh, that's pretty real, sir.
And then Taboot abandoned ship on the
end. Oh, you mean, what's his name? The captain.
Not Taboot. It's Taboot got killed. It's
snap neck.
Yeah, she got her naps next night.
Oh, right. Sorry, not Taboot.
I don't know.
The Quarren. I can't remember his name. Crawl?
No.
I don't remember.
He yelled his name all the time. He's like, where is he?
Neville.
Where is he? Get him. Yeah, Captain Neville. Where is he?
Neville. Captain Neville. Oh, my goodness. My brain kept saying Taboot because, you know, the dark side.
It was for a while. But yeah, yeah, so then Dala shows up with her crazy maw fleet with the Mandalorians who she had called to join her as her ace up the sleeve.
And her flagship is the Chimera.
Yeah, that was,
that was great. The fact that she has the Chimera, like, I can't imagine what that would have been like for when you guys are reading it when it was first published and before Clone Wars and Rebels and, you know, seeing that ship show up out of nowhere.
And I know how much Luke is into Imperial stuff, and to have Dala come back, I'm like, did you like that, Luke? Like, wasn't that awesome? Like, you know, that Dala would come back. Go ahead.
Luke. Well, I was more excited. I thought it was awesome because, you know, the Mandalorians are joining her, and, you know, Boba Fett asks Jaina if she wants to come, and she goes along with them. And this, them kind of bonding in the Trakad, and then they're talking about their assault, and Boba's like, all right, you're the ace Jedi, you know, how would you fly the Vasily? You know, and then it's basically her and Myrta and this fighter and stuff. I don't know, just all these things.
And where then they land.
Their respect. I know, but it just shows, like, the respect that he started to gain towards her and how she really was almost being like part of the clan.
Yeah. That moment when he's like, when they board the ship and they're fighting against the mutineers, and they're just like, when she's walking in just her flight suit and we're all in our armor, I need to remember to tell her one day how impressive that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was amazing. A great scene. And love that Jason got kneecapped.
Right before that, I texted you guys about it the other day when I was listening to it. But it was so funny because he was like, you know, get me the med ship or med transport. Yes. I got to get over to save Tahiri. And then Boba, I'm not going to get this right, but Boba was, you know, oh, we got a med transport docking. That's...
It's either a crazy doctor or
crazy doctor, some scumbag dressed up as a, you know, med transfer. Like, that's just hilarious because it's Jason and he is a scumbag.
He is a scumbag.
But just how he like said it in his Boba Fett voice on the audiobook was just so funny. I couldn't help but to laugh.
That's what I love about this, like the Karen Travis series, is like seeing Boba Fett at this point in his life. You know, like, he has a lot of relatable qualities, and he's so, like, he has a lot of pride and passion, even though he's just like, I don't want to show any emotion. I'm going to shut off. You know, like, the moment when he, like, grabs onto Myrta, and just, like, touches her hair to make sure she's okay.
In an awkward way.
He's like, stop it. You know, like, don't touch me.
Like, being awkward about it, though.
Oh, and whenever he like takes off his helmet for a couple of different people, it's like first time he's ever done that for anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like a moment for him.
He's finally become human. Like,
I feel like we got more out of him in this book, and I learned more about his character than probably any other books. Even like the Bounty Hunter War series or whatever, where he like comes, you know, where he gets out of the Sarlacc like and all that. I feel like it didn't add a ton to his character. It was kind of just basic Boba Fett. I feel like these books really added to him.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Especially those fighting scenes, you know, we just talked about in the Bloodfin. You know, them fighting, and he's like worried about Myrta and her soon-to-be husband. He's like, you know, I shouldn't have brought her.
And you know, yeah, he's like, don't make me regret buying you a wedding present. She's like, get a refund.
Well, he's like, Jason's the Jedi's. Nobody touches him, you know, stuff like that, you know, saving the kill.
Yeah.
So I just blast his kneecap, you know?
Oh, that was such a good scene. So yeah, when Jason shows up on his med ship, he's going in to rescue Tahiri, who's trapped on that ship, because they're going to retreat at this point, because what turns out that Dala has weapons that he cannot go up against. So he needs to regroup. And obviously at this point as well, Niathal has defected from him, and she's saying, that was the craziest part. Like, this book is a lot of it is this battle scene. And, you know, like the arguments that they're having back and forth being like, I don't acknowledge you as an authority. And everyone like, and can you imagine just being in the middle of a battle where you have two of your commanders arguing against each other and being like, I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to shoot you. No, shoot Double them. Kid. I'm going to shoot you. And everyone else just like, I don't know who to kill.
It's like that, the equivalent to like those funny Western scenes where or everyone's in a circle and they all have
Mexican standoff.
Yeah. The Office episode where they're doing the murder mystery at the end of the episode, all the fake guns out.
Well, hey, I did find that part if you guys want to hear it.
Go for it.
Okay, here we go. Paleon was past the adrenaline ice stage and into the phase of letting his body and training take over to resolve the threat. It was a shame. He was just a little too old now to do it with a display of physical force. He'd make his last punch count, though. I'm 92 years old. Of course I'm going to die, and quite soon. But it's how I die that matters to me. Please, get out of my cabin. That was his last... That last... if you haven't read it or listened to it, you gotta go.
And then
go.
He's like the utter darkness, and he's like doing the signal for Dalla.
He managed to fumble for the comlink and place it on the floor, but it was a struggle. He reached for the nearest hard surface and drummed his fingers. Rap, 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 rap. Paleon's pain came crashing back at that moment like a tidal wave that had hung motionless for a split second. And yes, he'd been right all along. It was black. Black oblivion, after all. And that, folks, is the death of Admiral Paleon. Which sucks.
He lived in his 90s, though.
He lived a life, didn't he, y'all?
Mm-hmm.
He had respect into his 90s, so...
Good call.
Yeah. So, Kytus and Tahiri escaped. Tahiri almost bled out and died.
Mm-hmm.
And then, basically, Kytus controls the GA now, because Nyathol basically is in exile with the group of her forces.
Yeah. And
I love when Myrta stabs Tahiri. That fight scene against the two of them when she's just like, and Jaina's like, how did she get through to a Jedi? And then when realizing the lightsaber has nothing against Beskar armor.
I love every character that learns that. Every character with a lightsaber that learns that. Like, what? It didn't work. I love it.
And wasn't in this book that they gave Boba Fett the neck collar?
Yes.
Was it in this book?
Yes, it was.
Like keeping you from suffering your father's fate.
Yeah. And like, yeah, one of them goes like, heads won't roll.
That's awesome.
It's like, ooh, it's morbid, but you know. That's Mando humor for you.
I think that's why I relate to them. I have a lot of very morbid humor.
Well, I think we could keep on. This is my favorite of all of the books. All of the Legacy of the Force books. It was so intense and so profound and heavy. There's so many layers, you know, the final battle having so many agendas crisscrossing and changing with every page. And it did make, when I did the episode with Coffee with Kenobi, it made the top five. And so part of it was the story, part of it that I felt like it was Karen Travis hitting on all cylinders. Just an amazing story, amazing book. I've read it over and over, or listened to it. Sorry, guys. I've listened to it over and over and over again. And it's just an incredible, incredible story. And I've contacted Karen Travis. And I really wanted to talk to her. I was hoping we would get a chance, but she just doesn't talk about Star Wars stuff anymore. However, I did let her know that we still love her work. And I hope that was an encouragement to her. But that, but that she didn't. That was the end of the conversation. She didn't.
At least
like,
we had a conversation. That's
yeah, funny. Yeah. I mean, it was an email conversation. It was like, I sent her. She responded. I responded to that, and that was the end of it. But yeah, it's sad because you know, I have you guys read any of the Halo stuff that she's written?
Yeah. Just her short stories.
Okay. Good.
I understand her frustration because, like, when you start writing a book and then you can no longer finish it because either you're told not to or somebody else is writing it, it is a bit of a heartbreak moment.
Yeah. Especially how many books she did and how much, like,
exactly
the backgrounds and characters she created. Oh, man.
Yeah.
The Halo books are good, Randy, if you're interested.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah. They deal with similar themes. Like, you know, the cloning and such.
Okay, I've seen them on I've seen them. I've bumped into them on Audible. You know, when I'm looking for Karen Travis, you know, books or whatever, and looking for the Star Wars book, what's next in line or whatever. What's next? I always bump into the Halo books too. And I think I for some reason I have this memory. Like, I saw a trilogy. They have packaged a trilogy at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, she has three in a trilogy she did.
And it was like all, it was bound together. It was like one big, giant Karen Travis book of awesomeness. Like, I just want to own it just so I can put it on my shelf. But so that's my thoughts on this book. One of my favorite Star Wars books. Definitely top five out of the 200 or so that were written. So I love it. Love it. Love it. It's that cool. And I love that, you know, when you like something and then everyone else likes it, you know, I Cole, you don't understand this, but when you like something, I'm just kidding. When you like a thing
and love it very much.
Yeah. When a woman loves a man. No, when you really appreciate something or really think something's cool, and then other people are like, yeah, it's cool, you kind of feel like, I don't know, like that. First, it validates your opinion, which it's important, which doesn't matter unless you care about the people who, you know, who agree with you. And the fact that you guys really have appreciated this, it means something to me. Luke, you know, I've been talking about this series for 4 years since we started, and the fact that you're like getting down with it like you are and just loving it, it just makes me feel so good. Like, because I've been saying it for years, like, hey, wait till we get to that series, wait till we get to the end, you're gonna love it. And and so it means a lot to me. It's just as you know, to have friends like you guys that are like, you know, willing to
in different countries,
different states, different countries, and that are just like just getting down with it too. And it doesn't matter if it's legends or canon or whatever, it's just incredible storytelling to me. So anyway, I feel like it's kind of like a Jerry Springer end of the episode kind of talk. But anyway, I just want you guys I really appreciate you guys liking this and agreeing with me and all that kind of stuff and investing into the characters and the stories and stuff. So that's why we started Legends Library for that purpose. So let's go around the horn. What are your guys' final thoughts on the book?
Somebody go.
I'm gonna call it. Cole?
Okay. Cole? Yeah. Okay. I think it's great. I love all the different threads that are in it. It's everything's coming together in the story, and like all the storyline, like a lot of the different threads have been closed off, and we're getting down to the final pieces of the story, and it's very satisfying seeing it all come together, seeing Boba Fett and like kind of come to grips with his humanity, and Ben growing up a bit, and Jaina understanding her role and everything, and Cadus going complete dark side. It's really something and really special.
Cool. How about you, Lisa?
Well, Well, we all know how much we all love Karen Travis. I really enjoyed the fact that in the ending of this, is you kind of have it as a happier ending versus the other books, whereas we get the wedding of Murtagav, and that Boba, you know, like he has a discussion with Sintas, who had been healed by Bard and Jessek at the request of Jaina, you know, and like, and Jaina's friendship with the Mandalorians is it's really lovely and inspiring at the same time. But my biggest gripe about this book, I mentioned it. There's thing I didn't like. There was no battle scene with the Besalik. I just wanted to see the like the ship in action, and we don't really see it at all. Like it was a very important part of the story of like, you know, we created these ships, and you know, like now we're like a terror, and I was expecting some like crazy battle and in space with, you know, going up against Jason maybe and like Jaina and a Besalik, and we didn't have it. So no. It's a little gutted. So I'm hoping maybe in the next book that Bobo shows up with a Besalik fighter, but no, it was really great. Like you get more to the characters that we loved from Karen Travis. And we see Jaina finally developing as she would by being trained by, you know, Boba Fett and Mandalorians. And obviously that's going to have a great influence in what's going to happen in the future.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I can't think of one portion of the book I didn't like. It's definitely 100% my top five, probably. I mean, we could talk about that all the time. That always changes, but top five for sure. And I'm trying to think, it's probably one of my favorite Karen Travis books. Wow. And I love those Clone War books, and especially like the way they build upon each other and those characters. But after, you know, 8 books in this series, you're starting to grow on some of these characters, you know, hearing all that about Jaina and then Ben's cool arc and then the Mandalorians, it was, and even Jason, he's starting to be just getting used to him as the bad guy. He may not be as menacing and have a cool costume like most bad guys, but
he got rid of the cape. That's why.
Yeah. He's fitting the role though. I'm really, really excited to see what happens in the next book. I ordered the book. It comes in tomorrow, so I'm going to listen to it first, and then I'm going to go ahead and read it for the finale. So the world may end before the next podcast airs.
Because you're actually reading a book?
Yes. So pretty excited about it. I mean, because, I don't know, I enjoyed this one so much. I really want to savor the final episode of this series. I haven't started the final book yet because it's, and I think we talked about it a little last month. It's one of those things where once I start it, it's over.
Yep.
You know, I kind of wish this would have been like maybe a 12 book series. Cause I feel like Jason is finally now he's being called Darth Kitus, like officially, but we only get one book of it. And it's like, he's now at the point of where he's like Darth Vader, you know what I mean? So I'm like, not the same, but he's taken over the GA. Everybody's calling him Darth, and then he's going to be gone next book. So I don't know. Well, loved spoiler. It. Loved it. Nothing. Everybody knows. I mean, come on.
By the way, this book,
nothing bad to say.
Oh, that's awesome. I was going to say this book was written 18 months or so before the 501st Republic Commando book. So Republic Commando
was the last book.
Yep. The Imperial, I'm sorry, Imperial Commando 501st was the last book.
But she was supposed to write in Fate of the Jedi. So I'm guessing she was probably going to close things up there.
Yeah, she probably had some chances to do that, or she probably was going to be given the chance to do that, but the Clone Wars took care of that, and then Christy Golden kind of took her place. And did a great job, but
she's no Karen Travis.
Yeah.
No one it's can different. Replace Karen Travis. Let's just put it that way.
I'm ready for Invincible.
All right. All right. Well, Lisa, why don't you let everybody know what's going on in your YouTubing world?
Well, yeah, I'm still finding the time to YouTube, and I just released one about the MI5 during the World War II in 1943. How they
sounds put, pretty like, cool.
A body into German Nazi territory with fake invasion plans.
Mm-hmm.
So it resulted in eventually the arrests of Mussolini, but it was like the Allies were able to get back into Europe by invading Sicily, even though they, you know, informed the Germans that they were going to be in Greece. But yeah, so yeah,
they tricked them.
They completely tricked them. It's a true story. It's you know, I just right now at this point, I'm just kind of publishing things that I find as a writer are really inspiring, and you know, books that I've always loved. I still do some Star Wars videos. I did one the other day about TK110, the guy who bumped his head on the Death Star.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, you know, and so I'm just still doing that, keeping on YouTube. If you check it out, it's at Lisa Mountain.
Cool.
And for you, Cole, what you got going on?
I've got my other podcast that we do weekly whenever we're on, and then we take off like a few weeks between books. And we're about to start up the second MedStar book. We should be recording on Sunday if everything works out. So we'll be covering that, and that's Abroa Skywalkers. And that's on Twitter at Abroa Skypod, and my Twitter is at Mando Wraith, and that's what I've got going on.
All right. Well, Luke, how about you, man?
So on Twitter, it's at Legends Library, and Facebook Legends Library Podcast. You probably noticed we haven't really been posting a lot. I've actually been taking some time away from social media, just personal reasons, trying to step away and slow things down in life, not to be a hippie. but that's why we haven't really been posting much. So just so everybody knows, I didn't die or anything like that.
Luke we didn't are die in Legends.
I'm just trying to focus more on family and stuff like that.
Barefoot. It's a Beatles reference because there's four of us. Anyway, you're the Paul in the story because you're. Never mind. So it's
who am I?
I don't know.
That's John.
John. Well, Cole's Ringo. I'm kidding.
There's a really funny Beatles story. I'll just say quickly. They were like, "Oh, Ringo's great, but he wasn't even the best drummer in the band."
yeah. It's like, is Ringo the star of the best drummer in the world? He's like, he's not even the best drummer in the Beatles.
Paul was a drummer. Paul could drum. I mean, I'm sure they all could kind of fake it or whatever, but I know Paul McCartney can drum too. Yeah. I just want to thank you guys again for taking us through this. And I was so proud. I'm going through menopause here. Like, I'm getting more mushy in my older age. I'm 46 now, guys. On Christmas Day, I turned 46. And so anyway, I'm getting more mushy. Anyway, I was really proud because at the end of the Coffee with Kenobi show, let me tell you about what's going on at Legends Library, and kind of explained what the library card was, and bring in the fortunate, how the Force intervened. And chose you two, Cole and Lisa, to join us, and how lucky we are to have two teammates to what was already fun with Luke and I talking Star Wars books, and was able to kind of explain or express like that you guys are permanent fixtures now, and just
feels like home.
It feels good, doesn't it? Like, this is really neat. And so with every episode. I don't take it for granted. I'm loving the now, you know. And so anyway, want you guys, all of you guys, all three of you guys to know like this is really fun and stuff. So so we're gonna finish this series strong with Invincible, and we're gonna get to see or hear and read Jaina go berserk. So well, until next month, my name is Randy.
And I'm Luke.
I'm Lisa.
And I'm Cole.
And may the force be with you.
See ya.
Always.
That concludes this edition of Legends Library. To join the discussion, please email the show at legendslibrary@coffeewithkenobi.com or comment and follow us on Twitter at Legends Library. Also, if you've not done so already, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave a review. Be sure to check out the other shows on our amazing network of podcasts, Coffee with Kenobi, Comics with Kenobi, Lattes with Leia, and Rebels Reactions. This has been a production of the Coffee with Kenobi Network. This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment for informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark or copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated. Legends Library. There's always a bit of truth in legends.